Are we recording?
Yeah, it's already going.
Really?
Yeah.
We're going?
We're good to go.
Okay, good, because I have a question for you.
Sure.
Are you ready to make podcast history?
Yeah!
This is gonna blow people's minds. This will be fun. So this podcast was not supposed to happen.
Oh.
There wasn't supposed to be a podcast, remember? Because I told you, like, I keep getting these ideas for doing a podcast.
Right.
And you're involved, and I don't know what the idea is, and I don't know how you're involved, but it can't happen. It can't happen because there's too much going on,
right. And
it's not going to happen. And here we are recording a podcast.
Yep.
So I guess we should introduce ourselves.
Okay. You go first.
Me? Okay. So my name is Jess Smiley. Yeah, I work as a graphic designer. So this whole podcast thing is outside. It's outside my comfort zone. I'm willing to give it a try. But like sound, I'm interested in it, but it's new to me. It's really new to me. So I'm glad you know what you're doing.
Well, sort of. So I'm Richard McLean, and I am a jack of all trades and a master of none. I've picked up on audio because of my interest in animation, actually. And so I've acquired... You told me about a podcast, and I got thinking about it. I came up with these questions for like an interview section.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, well, let's record. And I'm like... let's see what equipment I've got. And I pulled all this stuff together. I'm like, oh, I've actually got quite a bit.
Yeah, you do.
So here we are.
Wow. Yeah, and it's a cool setup. We're just here in your workroom.
Yeah.
Is this your office?
This is my office.
This is your office.
And I keep getting, like, you can tell I'm excited about the podcast because you see that pile of foam over there.
Ooh.
That's audio foam to treat this room.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah, that is exciting. And you've got a lot of audio stuff in here, records and... what are those called? Not the cassette tapes, before cassette tapes.
Oh, I've got 8 tracks.
8 tracks. Yeah.
8 tracks, CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays.
You have different players.
VHS.
Yeah.
I've got open reel. I've got cassette tape.
Wow. Well, I think we should pull the Beatles in and just record something.
Let's do it.
I think you're ready.
I've got an amp in the other room.
Oh, nice.
And a guitar.
Oh, man. Did you learn how to play it yet?
I can't really play it.
Okay. So this is cool because we gave ourselves I think ultimately we gave ourselves about a month to really like prepare.
Approximately.
And it's not like, I keep thinking about this. It's not only for this episode 1.
Yeah.
Whatever this ends up being. But we gave ourselves a month to figure out what the heck a podcast is for us and how we want to do it. Yeah. So that's not a lot of time to just like start a new project that involves... us as well as some other people and pulling in all sorts of files and starting a new website. And
yeah, I think the hardest part is just coordinating people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's got schedules.
Everybody has schedules. Yeah. So we're trying to, we're figuring it out, but we kind of set a date just before Halloween. And that's, I really like Halloween. I don't know if you have like any Halloween traditions or if you're into it at all.
For a long time, it was my favorite holiday.
Oh.
And then for a while, it was my least favorite holiday.
Okay.
Because I had a bad experience.
Oh, no.
But I'm starting to like it again.
Okay.
Maybe it's because I have kids.
Okay, I don't want to get into it, but like how long ago was the bad experience?
It was over 10 years ago.
Wow. That must have been really bad then.
It was pretty bad.
I'm sorry, whatever it was.
No, I mean, it's...
My birthday is just before Halloween, and I don't think that's necessarily related, but I do have in the same month, you know, just think of yourself as an 8-year-old where you have the holiday you really enjoy and your birthday like just before that. But they also kind of got tangled up, so a lot of my birthday memories are also like freaky Halloween memories. Okay. So birthdays are, maybe I'm afraid of my birthday a little bit.
So for me, I think it was just, it became my favorite holiday because of kind of the escapism.
Okay.
The putting on a costume, becoming something else.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Walt Disney quotes is, I can't quote it exactly, but he said something to the effect of, kids like to be scared. And that's why he put scary stuff in his movies.
Kids like to be scared.
Kids like to be scared. But, and when you think about it, kids like to be scared, but they like to be scared in a safe environment.
Sure.
So you can expose them to scary stuff.
Right.
In a way that they know they're still safe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Huh.
So I let my kids watch scary movies that are age appropriate.
Okay.
I did. My daughter was watching Coraline.
Okay, yeah.
She was like homesick from school or something.
Oh.
And I had to run an errand. And I just didn't even think about the fact she was watching that movie. And I left her home alone for the scariest part of the movie.
Oh, no. So what, like, how'd she take it?
She turned it off.
Okay.
And she still refuses to watch it.
Oh, wow.
Except she did watch it the other day.
You know what movie freaked me out as a kid? And now, like, look, actually, it's still kind of scary watching it as an adult. Harry and the Hendersons?
Oh, yeah. That's right on that shelf.
Did that freak you out?
It didn't. Like, not even a little bit.
No?
I thought it was hilarious.
See, it is funny. It is funny, but, like, it's scary enough and, like, just believable enough for me.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so knowing that we had Halloween coming up and we're going to kind of release this, we're kind of talking about, like, okay, well, what do we do? Like, do we come up with themes? Do we... I don't know, do something specific? Do we just put a bunch of things together that we like and just leave it at that? And we're thinking for this one, at least, it might be good to do like kind of a Halloween focus.
Right, right.
Mysterious goings-on and just strange things and weird. It's been a lot of fun getting this podcast ready. We were talking about this poem that we have in common, a Halloween poem.
Yeah.
And it's, I was looking online because I don't know anything about like the history, but it's 109 years old.
Wow.
This poem, which is kind of cool. I was thinking of using like one of Edgar Allan Poe's poems,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, they're just really easy to find and they are great poems. I love them.
Yeah. Telltale Heart is.
Telltale. Oh my gosh.
So freaky.
So good. But they're like, they're so mixed into like pop culture, like pretty well that like enough people know about it. Like they're easier to find. So I tried to find one that wasn't.
Hitting the Pendulum, The Raven, yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Cask of the Amontillado. I don't know how to say that, whatever that is. My dad growing up would recite this poem. And there was, I don't think there was ever any context. We were kind of talking about this. But I don't think he ever said like, okay, here comes this poem that I first heard. You know, there was none of that.
Right.
It was like it would just come out of him.
Right.
That, I guess, gives it kind of a mystical quality, a magical quality. Because I'm sure he was just as surprised as we were. Like, it probably just came to him and he just, you know, was excited and wanted to share it.
So, my grandpa, who turned 90 last Christmas, his birthday is Christmas Eve, he recites this same poem. When I was younger, it was a little more spread out, not as often.
Okay.
And it's kind of become a tradition over time as all the grandkids have heard it and we all have grown to love it through that. And so now, when we have a family reunion or a family gathering, he'll usually recite it.
Oh, cool.
He's got all kinds of things memorized, but that's the family favorite.
Have you tried to memorize it?
I haven't, but I've thought about it.
Yeah.
I'm not good.
It's basically the same thing.
I'm not good at memorizing things.
Yeah.
Unless they're put to music.
Huh. Yeah.
And even then, I don't pick up. Like, I've listened to songs probably 100 times, and I still don't have all the lyrics down.
Wow. This poem is called The Cremation of Sam McGee, and it was written by Robert W. Service and published in 1907. And so we have this recording of it, and I think it's perfect for setting the Halloween mood and getting us in kind of that unsettling feeling that surrounds Halloween, that spookier, darker side of Halloween. So here it is, The Cremation of Sam McGee, by Robert W. Service.
There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge, I cremated Sam McGee. Now, Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the South to roam round the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell, though he'd often say in his homely way that he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold. Through the parka's fold it stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes we'd closed and the lashes froze till sometimes we couldn't see. It wasn't much fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed and the stars o'erhead were dancing heel and toe, he turned to me and, "Cap," he said, "I'll cash in this trip, I guess. And if I do, I'm asking you won't refuse my last request." Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no. Then he says with a sort of moan, "It's the cursed cold, and it's got right hold till I'm chilled clean through to the bone. Yet, 'tain't being dead. It's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains. So I want you to swear that, foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains." A pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh, and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee, and before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left of Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brawn and brains, but you promised true, and it's up to you to cremate these last remains." Now a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were dumb, in my heart how I cursed that load. In the long, long night, by the lone firelight, while the huskies round in a ring howled out their woes to the homeless snows, oh God, how I loathed that thing. And every day that quiet clay seemed to heavier and heavier grow, and on I went, though the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad, and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in. And I'd often sing to the hateful thing, and it hearkened with a grin. Till I came to the marge of Lake LaBarge, and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, but I saw in a trice it was called the Alice May, and I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. Then here, I said, with a sudden cry, is my crematorium. Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. Some coal I found that was lying around, and I heaped the fuel higher. The flames just soared, and the furnace roared, such a blaze you seldom see. And I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal, and I stuffed in Sam McGee. Then I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why. And the greasy smoke and the inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out, and they danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked." Then the door I opened wide, and there sat Sam, looking cool and calm in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile, and he said, "Please close that door. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and storm. Since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm." There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee.
Love that poem.
Yeah.
So good.
It is so good. And I remember the first couple times I heard it, it was before I was kind of aware of things. And so I didn't get what the deal was.
Okay, yeah. And,
you know, it's like, oh, Grandpa's reciting that thing again.
Uh-huh.
And then I kind of clued into it later, but
that's funny. Yeah, that's how it was with my dad too. It was like, and I think at one point it was like, okay, here's like a long story that he tells that rhymes, that it's cool he memorized all this. But I, yeah, like you, I didn't really understand what was happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, now listening to it, it's like, I love that kind of dark humor. Like, that's just so great.
What's dark humor is weird because, okay, so there's dark comedy movies.
Uh-huh.
And some of them, like, there's this one that's considered a classic. I finally got around and watched it. I'm like, okay, everybody talks about this movie.
Sure.
It's a big award winner. Okay. I'm going to watch it because I just want to know what the deal was. And I was just horrified by it. It was so awful.
Oh, really?
I couldn't see the humor at all in it.
Okay. It was just dark?
Yeah, it was just
and no comedy.
Dark and there was no comedy. At least that's the way it impressed upon me.
Yeah.
And then there's some other ones. Like, I watched one the other night because I've been doing my Halloween movie festival.
That's right.
Got like 86 I'm trying to get through before Halloween starts.
That's awesome. Priorities. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. So when I watched it last year, it kind of struck me the same way. It was just dark.
Okay.
And there was no comedy. But when I watched it a couple nights ago, I was laughing my head off.
Huh.
I don't know what the difference is.
Were you in a weird mood?
I don't know.
Huh.
I just honestly don't know.
Weird.
So I was like, I guess I just wasn't getting the... I guess it was just...
Don't you think part of it too? Because you said it's kind of a classic. You used the word classic.
Well, this is a different one I'm talking about.
Oh, this is
the classic one. I don't think I'll ever watch again.
Okay, that was just
like
too much.
It was just too much. I don't think I'll ever watch that one again. This one was one I liked when I was younger.
Yeah,
and then I watched it last year, and I was just like, why did I like that?
Right, and then this year,
this year I watched it again, and I was just busting a gut.
Huh, that's funny. Oh, that's interesting. I think I still like a lot of the same, especially Halloween movies. Now that I'm older. And I love watching them with my family. And there's a lot of, I don't know, a Halloween movie, like, at least what I'm thinking. See, that's the other thing, like, that I wanted to bring up is, like, Halloween doesn't mean any one thing.
Right.
To anybody. Like, we're both talking about Halloween and things related to Halloween, but it's not, like, you can't put it on a map and say that's Halloween.
Right. So, when I was talking to... our interview for this episode.
Ooh.
He mentioned a movie he was watching on his Halloween watch list.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, I watched that one. I specifically chose not to watch that one on my Halloween list this year.
Okay.
Because to me, it wasn't Halloween-y enough.
Oh yeah, yeah. See, that's interesting.
But it was on his watch list.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I have some friends that have watched, like, Alien Attack movies.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, because it's aliens, it's Halloween. But it's just like an action movie with... Alien, and that's, like, to me is not...
Right, and I left everything like that off of my list.
Yeah. We're going to get, you know what it is? We're going to get a whole bunch of emails from people that are irate listening to this going, you guys clearly don't know what Halloween is. You don't know what a Halloween movie is. And we're going to have, they're going to give us a list.
For me, it's like, okay, it's kind of got to be spooky.
Uh-huh.
It's got to be, like, if it has that Victorian flavor to it, it helps.
Ooh. Sure.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then if it's any of like the classic monsters. So the Universal monsters, any of those qualify.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I would have a really hard time like pinning down what it is that makes, you know, a good Halloween movie for me.
Right.
And I'm okay. I don't know. I guess I'm okay with that. I'm open to that movie Jack Frost. Have you heard of Jack Frost? It's Michael Keaton.
Yeah, that one.
Have you seen that?
I've heard of it. I've not seen it.
I haven't seen it either, but I saw something online the other day, and it was like someone was just describing it, and I don't know why I was reading the darn thing. See what the internet does to our brains? Yeah. And so I'm like reading about Jack Frost, and it sounds like a horror movie. The kid's dad dies, and he comes back to life as a snowman? But the kid, like, isn't even... I don't know. It sounds terrifying. That's not a Halloween movie. I don't know where I'm going.
The funny thing is, there is another movie with the same name that is just straight up horror slasher flick.
This whole podcast thing is an experiment for me. It seems like it is for you too. We're both like picking stuff up and putting things together.
My only experience with podcasting, is listening.
Yeah, me too.
Right,
me too. Yeah, and it's fun. It's fun.
I ebb and flow on that. Like, I haven't actually been listening to anything lately.
Yeah.
At all.
That's interesting.
I did over the summer. I came across the Black Tapes podcast.
Right. Yeah.
Which is really appropriate for this time of year.
Yeah.
But then I ran out of episodes.
You pointed me to that, and I haven't listened yet. It's been a couple weeks since I've really been listening to anything, which is strange because I'm really excited about recording and putting things together.
Right. So that one's very Lovecraftian.
Is
very,
it?
Okay. Cthulhu mythos.
See, I have a hard time with the, like, Cthulhu side of Lovecraft. I like his more, like, psychological...
Well, this is kind of... There's no real Elder God stuff in it.
Okay.
But you can tell it's related to that.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
I'll get to it for sure. I set up a... One of the things that's new to me is I set up a Google Voice number, which I haven't done since like 2011 or something. And people can actually call it right now. Do you think anyone's listening? Like right now?
I think so.
You think someone's listening?
I think somebody's listening right this very second as we're saying these very words.
Not to the recording, but they're in the room!
But Jess,
yeah.
I have the police on the line. They've traced the call.
Oh no!
It's coming from inside.
Yikes! So this number, I set up this number. If you, for a good time, call 801-382-7672. And I sent out a call for scary stories, which is kind of weird that I asked people to send me their scary stories for a podcast because no one's heard this. We haven't even heard this yet. We're recording it now.
Right.
But I was saying, hey, and I didn't even tell people it was for a podcast because it's too much explaining. It's just like, I want to hear your scary stories. Call this number and tell me your scary story. And I think we'll get to that later. But I just want to say, like, hearing other people's ideas of what is scary and what is like... what counts as horror or what is related to Halloween is just like so interesting. Man, there's a lot that goes into that.
Have you looked at old photos of Halloween stuff?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, they're frightening.
Freaky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah, they'll put like actual pumpkins on their heads and they'll paint. And part of it is the photos themselves, like the technology of photography.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's that Victorian age.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That during that time period, they were really into the supernatural, and they were really into the spiritualism.
Yeah.
And so, just anything from that era just automatically has, like, a spooky...
Right. And it seems like there were a lot of group photos...
Well, yeah, because...
Where they're all posed in front of a house or a tree.
Yeah, because it was a big deal to take a photo. It wasn't like you were just whipping out the cell phone. Like,
yeah.
You had to set up the whole thing. So I was like, if we're going to take a picture, we're getting everyone in it.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, there's so much to... Those are really creepy. I made some creepy Valentine cards a few years ago using old Halloween photos.
Oh, nice.
And then I wrote like love letters with them, so it looked like really creepy. It was terrible.
On an open mind.
We Swim by Krestovsky.
Krestovsky, yeah.
Where'd you find that?
Actually from another podcast.
Okay.
That I listened to like 4 years ago. And I noticed that all these songs were coming from the same place. And it's free audio, or it's free music archive, something like that.
So we have this interview.
I didn't get to sit in on this interview.
Is a guy named Blair Starrett.
Yeah.
And he's a comic artist and other kinds of artists and musician and collector. And
he does everything.
He does a lot of things.
Yeah.
How did you meet him?
I met him years ago at a free comic book day event at Dragon's Keep Comics Shop down in Provo, Utah. And I was drawing pictures and he showed up. And I didn't know him, but he showed me his comic and kind of we started talking. And he just graduated from the Center for Cartoon Studies in White River Junction, Vermont. And I flipped out because I'd been looking at that school and the faculty and I've been following their work. And so he was like an instant celebrity to me. Like just the fact that it's like he came from Hogwarts.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then I find out he's Harry Potter. I met Harry Potter and he's B.C. Starrett. Yeah. And just a really cool, really cool guy.
Okay. Because I just met him through you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah.
That and when we went and watched the documentary, yeah. That's where I met him.
Yeah.
And then he invited me to some groups on Facebook. And so...
Yeah.
I kind of know him through that.
Cool.
So yeah, this was my interview with Blair Starrett. All right, well, Blair, welcome to the show. I'm glad that you could make arrangements to do this for us.
You're welcome.
Before we get into the questions, why don't you tell everyone who you are and what it is that you do?
My name is Blair Starrett. I live in Ogden, Utah. What do I do? I do lots. I work with special needs kids at an elementary school. That's my day job. But then on the side, I'm an artist, and there's no specific genre of art. It's just anything and everything. Film, music, comics, acting, all the above, I guess.
Awesome. All right. Well, what we do is we ask everyone the same questions. The name of this segment of the podcast is called I Tick, and it's just kind of, we're trying to figure out what makes people tick through these interviews.
Interesting.
Okay. All right, so Blair, why don't you tell us what your earliest memory is?
I thought about it. I think my earliest memory is a nightmare.
Okay.
That I had a dream. I dreamt that I was a fisherman at a river. at a location that was either my grandfather's ranch in Colorado or Camp Lamondi, which is here up in the mountains in Ogden. As I was in the river, the fish transformed into giant worms that rose out of the water with human-like faces, and they were either screaming, crying, or howling at me with gaping mouths, and they said... They said something to me. They gave me a message, but I don't think I understood it. I woke up and I was looking at the bars of my crib.
Oh my goodness.
And so I dreamt that I was an adult, basically. I remember the exact spot I was in the room next to the window in what became my older brother's bedroom. Just because it wasn't where I usually slept, I remembered that for some reason. And so this could possibly explain why I hate fishing and why I have a phobia of earthworms. It could have stemmed from this dream. And it was either the same night or around that time. I also either dreamt or saw... I forgot all about this until you asked me this question. Around this time, I either dreamt or saw the Hat Man come into my room, okay. Which is known as the leader of the shadow people that people often get visited by when they have sleep paralysis.
Oh, right.
So we just watched a documentary about this last weekend called The Nightmare, and it's pretty much what I remember, his dark silhouette. Whether it was actually him, I don't know, but I didn't really know how to interpret it at the time. I think he came out of the closet that my brother tied me up in that I wrote about in my comic book, Simeon. But that's my earliest memory.
Okay.
I don't know, it deals with nightmares, but it does.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that. So, Blair, do you have another story from your childhood that's influenced your life that maybe you haven't shared very often?
Something I haven't shared very often but has impacted the rest of my life is that I remember very clearly that the day that I decided that I would never use swear words in my language, and it was during a Sunday school lesson in primary by my neighbor, Sister Richards. And yeah, to this day, I just remember her saying that if you say something that you realize is wrong, you should go back and say, oops, I didn't mean that. Something like that. That's all but I just remember sitting there and just thinking, I'm never going to do that. And to this day, I guess I'm kind of proud of it, I guess. I've maybe sworn 3 times in my life, and that was all in like 5th grade or so, probably because of kids I was hanging around with.
Right.
Around that same time, I thought swearing's bad, what else is bad? And so I decided then and there not to drink or smoke or do drugs. And it's amazing how those types of decisions affect the rest of your life when you're that young, and it makes decisions a lot easier when you're older.
Definitely.
So
great.
All right, Blair, do you have a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life that you could share with us?
I think this is also from 5th grade.
Okay.
5th grade was a really pivotal year in my life. It's when I started drawing comics. It's when my family moved to Japan. It's when a lot of my music taste started developing, mostly because of my older brothers. When I got into a lot of the stuff I'm into today, I chose, instead of choosing a song, I chose a commercial for an album that was very influential during this part of my life. This is from a cassette that I think I stole from my brother's room. I heard him listening to it as I passed his doorway once, and I was like, what is that? And I had to find out. I was bad. I stole a lot of my brother's music just to experiment and find out what it was. But this is a commercial for the very first album by the Toy Dolls, and here it is.
Are you fed up with those same boring old records? Do you need something to brighten up your record collection? Well, the Toy Dolls' first LP is still on sale, and it sounds better than ever. Remember this one? It's Nelly! Hey, Nelly! Nelly's on the first LP, you know. Boom! We've put it out as a brand new single as well. It's excellent.
What about Dougie?
Oh, yeah. Dougie's on it. Listen! Dougie Gyro! You remember Dougie? Yeah! And just for all you Crossroads fans, Glenda and the Test Tube Baby! Getting blue suede shoes! This is the fastest version in the world! So fast, it'll give you backache! Uh-oh, it's Fiery Jack!
If you do get a backache, and you feel you have to reach for the first aid team,
yeah!
No, it's not that bad with the backache. If you see a team with Fiery Jackie, stay away!
Yes! The Toy Dolls' first LP, Dig That Groove, Baby, is still in the shops. For babies, granddads, great babies and great granddads. Available in your record shop now.
How much is it like?
$4.25 or thereabouts.
Awesome.
When I remember this album and thinking about it, I remember, first of all, living in Japan, and I remember feelings of very much not fitting in, being an outsider, being alone, having my first crush. I was always getting into trouble at school. I was seeing counselors. They are a year ahead of us in school system than we are in the States, so I was just lost and behind with what was being taught. And so, you know, here I was listening to British novelty punk music and a lot of alternative stuff from my brothers, but while other people were listening to things like, I don't know, Whitney Houston and Rick Ashley and stuff like that. But it was really my gateway band and album into collecting bizarre and unusual music. It's funny how this album affects people, because I introduced it to my best friend in middle school, and it led him to being his lifelong obsession with punk music. So, and I I took the novelty side, he took the punk side. But yeah, those are the memories it conjures up.
Yeah, I know that. Like, I heard Nelly the Elephant when I was probably in junior high. I think it was Dr. Demento.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I could see him maybe playing that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's where I first heard it. Yeah, and I kind of understand. Like, I moved from Idaho to Utah in 3rd grade, and I don't remember why, but my parents had me held back, so I did 3rd grade again. So I ended up talking to counselors and stuff too.
So, counselors are weird. They are,
and the thing is, they kind of lied to me. They didn't tell me I was going to counseling, of course. They just said, oh, there's this program and we have to get your parents' permission to be in it. And we'll do play games and stuff and we'll do other stuff. And you'll get it to come out of class and be with other kids for part of the day. And I was like, okay, yeah, sign me up for it. And it literally wasn't until years later that I realized, wait a minute.
They tricked you.
They had me in counseling.
Yeah. I think I was there mostly because they noticed I didn't have friends, so, and that I just sat by myself at recess and things. So
I think for me it was because I cried a lot. I just wore my emotions on my sleeve, and when I was upset, I would cry. And they're like, "Oh, we got to get this kid to not cry, or they'll just eat him up in junior high."
Yeah, my teacher made me cry in front of the class a lot as well. So I would leave my glasses at home purposely, so she would send me home for them, and that's how I would skip school.
Oh goodness!
I'd take a long walk home. Yeah, anyway, the counselors were so weird. There were no other kids. It was just me and some adult in a room, and they would ask me about nightmares. They would ask me about death. They asked me what I thought death was, and I explained the entire Lehi's Dream from the Book of Mormon. Because I saw a picture book of that, and I thought, this is what death was, that you die, and then you got to hold on to this rod as soon as you die. Because the winds are going to blow and things are going to try to pull you off it. And there's like fire pits and a giant lake, the paths of obscurity or whatever. There are people that laugh at you from a floating building. And I'm like, and then if you get to the end, there's a tree with white fruit and it's really delicious. And I'm really embarrassed about that today because a few weeks later we had a Sunday school lesson on it. And I'm like, wait, this is symbolic? The word of God, the iron rods, it's just the word of God. And I felt really stupid because I was the only Mormon kid besides my little brother at the elementary school, and just thought about the strange impression I made.
Right.
My counselor. Anyway.
All right. All right, Blair, can you share with us another piece of media, be it a movie, cartoon, comic book, whatever, or another piece of music, if you want, that's also been highly influential in your life?
I'm sharing a film. And again, this is from fifth grade in Japan, but I was at a sleepover with my Japanese best friend, and he showed me this thing called Mr. Vampire. And this is a Chinese vampire film, and the prime example of one. And we watched it in Chinese without subtitles. In Japanese, it's called Reigen Doshi. And it really latched onto my imagination. Me and my friends would often imitate this film at night in the streets. Someone would pretending to be the hopping vampire. Someone would be the Taoist Ghostbuster priest. Someone would be the mortician, like the interns that worked at the mortuary that are in the film. I don't know what other word to use for them. In English, it translates to Mr. Stiff Corpse. And they aren't really vampires as we know them, per se. Have you heard of hopping vampires before?
I haven't.
They hop around like bunny rabbits, and this is because they have rigor mortis. And you can stop them. You know, the Christian symbolism does nothing because they're from another culture.
Right.
You can stop them by sticking yellow spell papers to their foreheads written in chicken blood. These are called fulu. They hate their own reflection. They hate children's urine, of course, chicken and dog blood. I think it's usually black dogs and white rice. And I watched this over and over and over, not knowing really what they were saying. But it's a pretty easy film to understand without subtitles. And I just loved how completely outside our Western culture that it was and how exotic it was. And it was amazing how this took off in Asia. So I watched this film turn into this obsessed explosion in Asia with Chinese vampires, especially in Japan, where I was. And it was kind of like the Star Wars phenomenon in the United States. So I got to see part two in the theater. I had part three on cassette, and it had numerous sequels, numerous cash-ins, and I would watch the Taiwanese cash-in films called Hello Dracula that would air on television as a miniseries in Japan, and the rip-off films of this movie, even though there were hopping vampire films before this, this is the one that launched the whole phenomenon, per se, and the rip-offs and cash-ins are just countless. The vampires in Japan are called Kyonshi, and just my obsession with Kyonshi, or Jiangshi, as they're called in Chinese, has continue to this day. So I have probably around 200 hopping vampire films, and I have the films on every format possible, whether it's Beta, Laserdisc, or VCD, DVD, whatever. And I have all the posters, records that came out from the music of these films, and other things, toys, coloring books, all the above.
Oh, wow.
So
what was it like picking up, was it hard to pick up the language, or what was that like? Because I've always struggled with languages myself. I don't speak another one.
Japanese?
Yeah.
I was horrible because I was thrown into a private international school called Canadian Academy. we spoke English at the school, and so Japanese wasn't required very much in my life, other than to just, I learned enough to just buy something at the store or find directions. But I was really, really terrible at learning it, so much that they kicked me out of Japanese my second year of school. They probably figured this guy just isn't getting it. So I just know the basics. I can read a lot of Japanese and I know a lot of vocabulary. But I served my mission in Taiwan, and so my Chinese is actually a lot better than my Japanese.
Okay. that's really interesting to me. All right, Blur, tell us about your passion and why do you do it?
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah.
So I know you do the Halloween album things and the Exotica album things, and I know you're into VHS tapes and Crazy Bee movies.
Well, it's kind of all the above.
Okay.
I mean, I run something that's called Lost Media Archive, and I've done a lot of things with it, but basically it's just a fancy name for my media collection.
Okay.
It sound like it's an organization or something.
Right. I had actually wondered about that.
Yeah. And so I pretend that I have a staff and that I have all these people. And it just sounds more professional to people. And that's how I get to do I do a lot of panels at Comic-Con about film and media and things. I'm like, VC Star from the Lost Media Archive, you know.
Right.
Which is just a collection of records and films and stuff. But the difference being that I use my collection to host a lot of public events. I've been hosting, film nights called the Incredibly Strange Movie Night since 2003. And for about 12 years or so, it was every week. And it was started in Provo, basically, because there's nothing to do in Provo. And so it was, the Incredibly Strange Movie Night that I would invite the public to. I would put flyers all over Provo, all over BYU. Most people ignored them, but the few that came, some people got married because of it. Some people met there. The whole Troll 2 phenomenon happened through Incredibly Strange Movie Night when I hosted the world's first cast reunion for that movie. So some of these I would hold at venues. Later, people who saw my programming, my flyers, my pamphlets and stuff, they made me a programmer for the Salt Lake City Film Festival. And then I had my own film series at Groovy's Movie Theater in Salt Lake City. But I quit that after I got engaged because I had to drop some of the plates I was balancing in life.
Understandable.
The Lost Media Archive is probably my biggest passion because it encompasses all of my interests. So it's film, it's music, it's forgotten, esoteric-centric media, it's comics, it's art, all the dead media formats that I get and the machines that play them, that I get my hands on. There's a Channel 2 news story that you can pull up on YouTube about them interviewing me and my collection with my friend Tyrone, who used to be my mission companion. Because of this news clip, he's always associated with Lost Media Archive.
Oh, okay.
Most of his life, even though he doesn't do very much with it anymore. But he still to this day uses it to promote what he does as well. So I have over 35, I don't remember, the last time I counted, which was like 6 years ago, I had over 35,000 films.
Wow.
It makes me take a deep breath.
I thought my collection was big, but
I've never counted my record collection, but it encompasses several rooms and a warehouse. But I do have most of my Halloween records together. That's why you see those posted almost every day.
Right.
Just because it's part of my collection I decided to focus on for a while. But I don't collect just to say that, I have this and you don't.
Right.
I'm just a collector of things that interest me. And I collected kind of like the way Jello Biafra describes his record collection. It's just an arsenal against bad radio and top 40 music and boring media and movies. So it's just my own little safe haven. to go to. You know, other people get away going skiing or hunting. And for me, I get away with music and film. So to me, these things are more mind expanding. They're more, they give you more a cultural experience. And I think they're very important parts of historical preservation. You know, it's my favorite kind of escapism, I guess. And I feel some strange sense of duty to preserve this stuff. And I've been reissuing some of it here and there, especially things that I either have access to the people that made it, or I know that either the person who made it died and never gave it to anybody.
Okay.
So my last big preservation release through the Lost Media Archive was a film called Frankenstein's Planet of Monsters. And I'm being interviewed about it right now as we speak for Monster Magazine, and I guess that'll be coming out, I don't know, the next month or so. It's like a dual article about my involvement with Troll 2 and this movie called Frankenstein's Planet of Monsters, where it was just an obscure VHS tape I found in Boston at a record store. I didn't have much money on me. I could only afford one tape, and it was either this movie about cave women and stop animated dinosaurs or this strange Frankenstein tape. And I went with a Frankenstein tape I went for because the handwritten quality of the label, of the really poorly drawn artwork on the cover. And I just thought, this is something I will never see again. Who knows what this thing is? It turned out to be the entire film was shot on Super 8 in the late 80s, early 90s, directed by Brad Anderson, who went on to be a Hollywood director. He works on TV shows like The Wire and stuff like that. But I showed this movie at Incredibly Strange Movie Night. Only one person showed up that night for that part. It was a double bill. Most people showed up for the second film.
Okay.
I showed it with Mysterious Planet, also by Brett Piper, who did that cave woman movie. one of the actresses from the film saw my blog post and contacted the screenwriter who played Frankenstein. He then contacted me and said, how in the world did you find this thing? Because the only copies made were given to the actors as payment for for being in this film. I love this film so much. I asked for his permission to release it. He bought the rights to his own film just so we could do this. We tried to contact the director, but he seems to have no interest in this film whatsoever. You know, it's one of his early works. He's moved on to bigger and better things.
Right.
But maybe with this new article in this magazine, maybe he'll start caring about his filming. It was my first release, and it took me years to figure out what to do with it. I tried to do a crowdfunding thing to release like a professional DVD of it, but nobody had interest in a DVD. It was so strange. And so it was when I discovered the VHS groups on Facebook and presented this film and talked about a DVD release, and they're like, no, 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 no. VHS is the way to go. They said, you have to release it the way you found it. Duplicate the artwork, you know, just make it look like the original copy. That's what I did. And every batch that I come up with sells out within the week or a few days. So this is my last remaining. This is one of the Lost Media copies, but it's a duplication of the original artwork. There's a huge like monster scene in this movie. There's a horde of monsters, and all the people that showed up, I think they were all volunteers. And they just had to come in their own costume. But yeah, Mike Brunell, who played Frankenstein, it's co-released through him. And I put some of his early Super 8 monster films from his childhood as bonus films on the tape. So that's a lot of what my passion is. And I hope to do a lot more releases in the future. I have some in the works. But whether it's records, cassettes, or films, I hope to be involved with reviving them and making them available. And I will probably never stop showing films to people, whether they like it or not.
I love it. I got to make it out to one of your film nights one of these days.
Yeah, it's documentaries right now. But
right. Yeah, I wanted to go see your...
the nightmare one?
Yeah, the one you just did. Yeah, the paralysis thing.
Sleep paralysis,
yeah.
A lot of people didn't want to come to that one. A lot of people have been avoiding it.
Oh, really? I'm fascinated in it because I've experienced it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people told me they don't want to believe in that stuff, and so that's why they didn't want to come. Or some would say, if I watch this, I would never, you know, I just wouldn't be able to sleep because my mind goes crazy thinking about stuff. And yeah, and because I had a little bit of difficulty probably with it too, just because I've experienced it a lot as well. And it's one of those things where you talk about it, you're scared that it's going to happen because you're drawing attention to it.
Yeah.
So that night after the film, I had to sleep with a movie on in the background. I've noticed that they don't usually come when there's a distraction in the room. So
yeah, I haven't experienced a lot, but 3 or 4 times. So yeah.
Did you see things with yours?
No, I don't think I did. I just remember I had a friend who has, though.
Yeah, I usually get my eyes closed because I didn't want to see anything.
I don't think I ever opened my eyes, come to think of it. But yeah, I have experienced it. So
it's a scary thing.
Yeah, it really it really is. It's. Yeah, I don't even know how to expound upon that. Other than
yeah,
it's just...
I think nobody, to this day, I think nobody knows the purpose of it or why it exists, you know? And I would get angry when people would say, oh, you dreamt it, you know? But if people are just dreaming it, how come so many people are describing the exact same thing happening and the exact... I've only had one or two shadow people visit me, and I didn't know what they were. But the fact that people describe these same people, the same things visiting them over and over, and it being so real. I mean, how come I don't have a dream about eating spaghetti or something and it's as real as that, you know?
Right.
That was a bad example, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, Blair, what makes you tick?
I mean, we talked about VHS, we talked about film and music, and I really love art. So, but I'm the type of art I'm into, I don't really know how to explain. I love outsider art, just like I love outsider music. I'm really into, right now, I keep coming back to it. It's a phase that it keeps coming back, being into really poorly drawn comic books. especially from the 80s and 90s.
Okay.
And I'm not a huge Ninja Turtles fan, but I love what they created or started. I love the fact that suddenly all these people thought they could replicate the success of the Ninja Turtles. And I have, I mean, countless ripoffs of the Ninja Turtles, of just like other people coming up with other mutant animals. And the titles are always adjective, animal, you know. You know, Hastings is going out of business.
Oh, right.
So I've been scouring through their comic book bins. I have 2 copies of this comic book. One has these guys on the cover, but oh my gosh, these drawings. They're called, I don't even know how to say this, Crim Animals, like combination of crime and animals. And I don't know what that is either. It's like a lion, alligator person killing somebody. This is a really violent comic book. And these are so curious to me because most of them don't make it past the first issue. And so the very last panel, it's this guy with an octopus head. He says, "Wait till they get a load of me." And then, "Can it be true? Neo-Nazi mutant terrorists? Find out next issue." That never happened.
Oh my goodness.
But other than like the animal ones, just all of the action and fantasy genre of independent comics during that period are probably the best part of it, in my opinion, just because you have all the anatomically incorrect muscle men, you know, doing really ridiculous things. Oh, man. I love these ones called John Tar. And I just love that these comic books look like they were just drawn by somebody in middle school. It's like something they would draw in their notebook, you know?
Right.
Here he comes later. John Tar Returns. This also came from Hastings. This is Demon's Blood. And sometimes, I mean, there's a ninja in this too, but sometimes I have no idea what's going on with this artwork. I guess that's the ninja guy being bit by a serpent thing coming out of another guy's mouth. I have no idea. Oh, the Demon Hunters. And, okay, some of the paintings on the backs of these are just muscle people doing stupid things. So this... This is the back of a Kira. Her name is Kira, some muscle barbarian woman. But they do these paintings of her. You know, they just found a picture of some muscle woman posing, and they took her pose and tried to make an action scene out of it.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to say the title of this one. Thor Schverd. Anyway, you got the guy with his eyeball missing. Look at this painting on the back. Oh, yeah. Look at those veiny, muscular, humongous arms. But it never ends. It just never ends. I just love the outsider art of these things, and I love that they shouldn't exist. Look at this baby with giant fingers on the cover. Stormbringer, a naked guy that can call the lightning. This is one that I just barely found called The Adapters, and... The artwork is so funny in these that it's just a world that I wish I could live in or visit, you know. New beginnings. New York outlaws. I love this giant foot kicking somebody on the cover. It's just a parallel universe that I kind of wish was real. This is probably my favorite one. I don't know if I've actually... I probably have read it once. So I don't remember anything that it said. It's just the artwork is so incredible. It's called Lucas Revival. And I found this in a dollar bin in New Hampshire, and it has these cone head people. But other than really detailed depictions of buildings and the environment, you get really weird shots of these people fighting. And I mean, look at these atmospheres that this guy came up with.
It was like mushroom tier cloud built mountains.
And I love whenever you see a picture of somebody's hand, he draws all the veins in his hands.
That just takes me back to junior high. And the I wasn't so veiny, but my anatomy was bad. And
here's another fight with a cone head guy. And I don't know what that thing is. It looks like a bar, or maybe it's a laser. It comes out of his wrist thing. But then, like, in the next shot, he's, like, climbing bars that look exactly like a laser he shot. So... oh my gosh, I could just look at this comic book forever just because of how bizarre it is. That's something I'm really obsessed with right now again.
So just last week I found a folder in the basement that was all the comics that I drew in junior high and high school.
Oh yes, I love people's childhood comics. And yeah, what did you draw? Like, what were some of the titles?
Well, the one I did was called Lore, and it was this kind of he was kind of like Zorro type character. And I love sci-fi and I love fantasy, and I just wanted to combine them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I had like this world where it was a normal world, and then the fantasy world started to break through, and then they were kind of mixing, and this lore guy, he could kind of travel in between, and he had to kind of stop the barrier to keep the one from taking over the other. And
I think when you're a kid, you just don't care. You think you can do it all.
Right.
You know? It doesn't matter what it is, what it involves, you can draw it because you don't care. But as you get older, you start to learn what art's supposed to look like, and, you know, how you're supposed to draw things and how you're supposed to make panels and borders, and, you know, and it's all important. But to me, that killed a lot of my childhood creativity. I feel, in a way, my own opinion. this is working at the elementary school. I help kids draw comics. Or, you know, we have, like, freebie days where people can choose to learn art or, you know, a subject that they don't normally teach in the school. And so I teach comic book classes. And one of my students, I found this in the classroom, and it's a Minecraft comic book combined with Five Nights at Freddy's. And he didn't want it anymore. I just said, can I have this? And he's like, yeah. But, I mean, he spent a lot of time. It's a full comic book. He probably didn't want it because somebody colored his drawings, you know?
Right.
Somebody took a marker to it, and he's like, oh, they ruined it. But, I mean, I love this stuff. I love outsider art, and I love especially outsider comic books. This boy's sister... This guy graduated from art school, but his sister is now in my class, and she is becoming an amazing artist, and we are co-drawing and painting a mural right now for the school library.
Very cool.
Oh, can I show you one more?
Yeah, do it.
Where'd it go? Speaking of local stuff, well, while I'm finding... Speaking of local stuff, the latest Dithering Doodles just came out by Steve Anderson. His Halloween issue, which he handed off to me last night. He drove all the way to Ogden. He's so passionate about getting his comics out to people that he just gives them away for free. And I don't know how he has kept this up for so many years without feeling like I'm not making any money. Why am I doing this? I'm spending hundreds of dollars every month. Oh, here it is. My favorite local comic book. And I only got photocopies of it, but it's super Mexican.
Nice.
And I guess he was out of the color copies. So yeah, like who makes comics like this?
Oh, wow.
And I don't even, I think he hired an artist to draw these things. He's just he just wrote them. And he, this guy, Dominguez, or what's his name? Whatever his name is, That's a picture of him. I contacted him after I found these comic books and had lunch with him. And he thought that I wanted to make fun of him. And I was like, no, I'm literally a fan. I really am a fan of this stuff. He's like, that's funny because when I released these at Comic-Con in California, everyone made fun of me. And people would constantly call me on the phone making fun of me and would come to my house. So much that he changed his name.
Oh my gosh.
So his new name, he signed it. It's Dante Antonio Dominguez. Dante Antonio. He changed his name to Dante. Dang, it must be an issue too. But there's a picture of Super Mexican right there. He wears a sombrero and has a cape. The author actually owns this costume. And he dresses up like Super Mexican, and he performs. I've seen pictures of him performing with his guitar. I've wanted him to show up at Incredibly Strange Movie Nights because I've had odd musicians in the past make appearances. But when I met him, he was trying to get on Taco Bell commercials with this character. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, in my mind, I'm thinking they wouldn't touch you with a 10-foot pole because of the political uncorrectness of it all. But so other than all the art and films and music and records, and a lot of people don't understand it, that I'm an artist as well as a religious person, but the gospel of Jesus Christ is something that really makes me tick, and my life hinges on it, you know, no matter what else I'm into. That's the core of everything. Right. So you'll find me reading a lot of books on horror films or odd music and things, but you'll also find me reading a lot of religion books. So, like, what am I reading right now? Let's see. I must have left it at school. But I'm reading a book on obedience by Neil A. Maxwell.
Okay.
So I used to work at the Pioneer Book in Provo to help feed my other obsession of religion and books. So it still carries with me as well.
Well, thanks for sharing that. So, Blair, if people want to contact you to get more information on the Lost Media Archives or you know, hire you out for art or something like that, how can people get in contact with you?
My blog is pretty much out of date because I haven't had the internet for years, but I do have my iPhone. So you can, easiest way to find me is on Facebook, just under BC Sterrett, and my last name is Sterrett. It means bridge over a bog in Celtic.
Nice.
I don't know if that helps, but and you'll see Lost Media Archive also under my name. There's another page for it, but I found that I just talk more about it on my own profiles because there's too much in life to do. But yeah, I'm there. My wife's there. She's a musician. The two of us do a lot of shows. We just released her Halloween album, and we just had two CD release shows in Salt Lake. And yeah.
Any upcoming events?
Let me take a look. Most of them just happened, and so that's...
Oh, I understand that.
Distribute. But I'm making a cameo appearance on the Vinyl Cobwebs radio show, which is supposed to happen this month. But I'm supposed to be on the Halloween episode, but one of the key DJs is going through a lot in life right now, so I don't know if... when it's going to happen. Every month with friends in Orem, usually, or Salt Lake, we have something called Ghost Night, which is sometimes open to the public. It's where friends get together and you can either share your own ghost experiences, or sometimes we write our own horror stories. So it's a writing group, it's a short storytelling group, we make films for each other sometimes. And this time, I think they are assigning presentations. So I'm assigned a presentation about a haunted house in Eagle, Colorado, that I've visited several times that used to belong to my family that just was sold recently. I think that's the house that I got hantavirus from over the summer.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyone interested in joining Ghost Nights, they're pretty interesting. UFOs and anything paranormal is also involved. We have a page on Facebook called Super Paranormal, where we share a lot of YouTube stuff and stories and photos. You can also join the Halloween Records group that I'm a big part of. It's just called Halloween Records on Facebook. I didn't create it, but I post the most on it.
I've noticed.
Well, the founder, his posts would only happen like once every couple months or so, and I'm like, come on. So I just decided I'm gonna post my entire Halloween record collection day by day, but there's so much of it, so I try to limit myself to 3 posts each time. And you can also find me on the VHS Misfits group, where I release, that's where I distribute my Lost Media Archive film releases. And our next film release is either going to be a sci-fi film by elementary school kids in the early 90s, a film written and acted completely by this elementary school class called Super Bear, and he flies through space, and he's like basically a bear version of Superman.
Nice.
But the special effects and the homemade aspects of it are really intriguing to me, and one of the girls involved in this lives in Salt Lake, and I'm trying to get her to do a commentary track, but she either doesn't care about it very much, or she just... I don't know how much she wants to do it, but she's hard to get a hold of. That's what's holding the project back.
Oh, okay.
And then an avant-garde film called Stealing Away by another local film director, which is around 2 hours of experimental music, no dialogue, and scenes of aliens coming to Earth made out of plastic bags and car parts. And I think it was also shot on Super 8 and 16mm film. And if you're LDS, you'll find some secret LDS themes in it, which is interesting.
Oh.
But Tyrone Davies is a teacher at Westminster College in their film department, and it was one of his first movies that he's never released, and so it's a project that I'm trying to take on as well.
Okay. Alrighty.
This has been fun.
Thanks for doing it.
You're welcome.
I was taking notes on my phone while I was listening to this interview, and I just had to stop taking notes because, like, you guys go so many places. So many good places. Like, look at this. Well, first off, like, his earliest memory is a nightmare?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Poor guy. But also, like, the rest of us were like, what? Like, tell me more. Who is this guy?
Right. And well, and if you've read his comic,
yeah,
Simeon, there's like so much like terror in his life.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Like, I had not read a lot of comics like that when I read his comic.
Okay.
And I've read a few since, but are just that self autobiographical kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I don't know that I could do one like that.
Yeah.
Because I've read them and I'm like, you're like naked to the world.
Right.
You're putting yourself out there.
Right.
I have too many walls put up. I don't think I could expose myself like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very, very brave. Like, the word brave comes to mind.
Yeah.
And honest.
Yeah.
Seems like a really honest guy. That, he brought up hopping vampires.
Yeah.
So great. I've never heard of that.
I had never either.
Hopping vampires.
Yeah. So it's an Asian thing, I guess.
Yeah. I'm going to look that up. Sleep paralysis? You both
have experienced sleep paralysis? I have experienced that. That is terrifying.
That sounds awful. Oh my gosh. I never want that. Are you afraid it's going to happen again?
I'm not. It's happened, I think, 3 or 4 times now. Each time it happens to me, it's still uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But because I've been through it before, I don't think the impact is quite as much.
Okay.
So, like, in the moment, maybe yes, but I guess I get over it faster now.
Huh.
But like I said, it hasn't been a lot of times, but, and now that I know what's going on, like, the first time was horrible.
Wow.
Because the first time, I had at least heard of it.
Okay.
The first time. So, but it took me a minute to realize what was going on. So, it was going on. And it just feels like a living nightmare, basically. And after a few minutes, my mind finally calmed down enough to go, okay, this is that thing I've heard about. And then I just dealt with it in the way that I felt most appropriate for myself.
Jeez.
Until I got out of it.
Was it like an all-night thing? Like hours on end?
No. It's like coming out of a dream, kind of.
Okay.
You know how you're dreaming and then you realize you're dreaming?
Sure.
It's kind of like that.
Okay.
So it's happening to you and you kind of start to panic, but then you kind of realize, well, I realize what's going on, but only because I'd heard of it before. I can't imagine what it would have been like had I not heard of it before.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Yeah. You know what? The first time I heard about it was this guy, Mike Birbiglia. Have you heard of him?
No.
But he talked about it on This American Life, the podcast. And there were, like, a few stories about sleep paralysis that just sounded terrifying, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first I'd ever heard of it. If that had happened to me, not knowing what it was, oh my gosh, you'd think it was the end of the world.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because that's how you feel at first. I mean, that's how I felt at first.
Sure.
Because I didn't know what was going on. And then when I clued into what it was,
yeah,
and I started to think a little more clearly anyway, so.
Blair, okay, I just want to throw this out real quick. And Blair seemed to mention it, like, just briefly, like, he just slipped it in there, that he caught the hantavirus.
Yeah.
And then there was no, like, and that was it. He was like, oh, that reminds me of, like...
The haunted house I visited, where I think I caught the hantavirus this summer. Right. And, like, right. I knew he'd been to the haunted house. I'd seen his pictures of the place.
Okay.
And I knew he was sick afterwards. I didn't know it was the hantavirus.
Gosh, this poor guy. And all the, like... And I mean, both of you could commiserate with the like school counselors and just like that whole situation. And the like, he kept bringing up like outsider films, outsider art, outsider audio, like being an outsider in school. Yeah. And he, man, he's just so talented with his music. There wasn't a lot about his music, but I was scrolling through his Facebook page and like he plays the singing saw and. Like he did, you know, a lot of recordings with his wife.
Yeah, he's going to come into town in the next few days, and I've purchased some records from him, cool. Including his wife's album that just came out. So I'll get a chance to listen to that.
Very cool. Oh, that's awesome.
So he posted a bunch of Halloween records online, and I said, I want this one and this one and this one and this one. And then he gave me prices, and I said, okay, I can only take that one and that one and that one.
Yeah. Okay. So you're getting a special delivery.
I am, next time he's down here.
Very cool.
Yeah, we did the interview over Skype, so that was a first for me. First podcast.
First Skype.
First long... No, I'd done Skype before, but I'd never done, okay, how am I going to record this thing?
Yeah.
So, first podcast, first recorded interview that's done long distance.
Yeah.
But it was a lot easier than I thought.
Okay.
So...
Setting up this Google Voice number, I had to ask you for help, and I just... It was a dumb little thing that I messed up. But I got it set up, and like the first week I had... I told people, you know, on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram... I'm doing an experiment. I'm doing a project. Call this number and tell me your scariest story. And like the initial response people were giving me was, you're giving people your personal number? Like, why are you? I'm like, no, it's not my, no. Yeah. I can get rid of it anytime.
I got the same response. I gave somebody my business card at, Comic-Con.
Uh-huh.
And he looked at it and he looked on the other side and he's like, your phone number's on there? Well, yeah, it's a business card.
Yeah.
I want people to get a hold of me.
It's a business. Yeah.
It's a business card. He's like, well, you're brave.
Huh. It's yeah. Cause what you really want is a business that you can't get hold of.
Yeah.
Cause you, it's a business that you, like, you want what you can't have. That's what people really want in a business, is not to...
I think we've gotten so paranoid.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm paranoid about certain things. Uh-huh. I fully admit that. I do things that other people are like, what's your problem? And I'm like, the government!
Yeah. 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 Well, I was nervous we were going to get some calls that, like, I was going to have to hang up on, or, like, just delete immediately, or right. I don't know. And we didn't get anything like that.
Okay. And but you just wait.
They'll come. Well, I know this is our, now that you guys are listening, now that you see this is a podcast and you can call in and leave a message. By the way, the number is 801-382-7672. And you can call and just leave comments or your thoughts, or you can still share a scary story of your own. But, holy cow. We got like more than a half hour of messages.
Wow.
Like I stacked them all next to each other, mm-hmm. and we had more than a half hour of recordings. And then I had, I got a couple more stories last night that people wrote to me. They didn't feel comfortable calling in, and that's cool. So I had like 7 or 8 stories that people had typed up and sent to me, like memories that they had or experiences. So there's no shortage of scary stories.
Okay, cool.
But again, like what's really interesting to me is like, what's a scary Halloween experience for me is maybe vastly different than, you know, this caller or this caller. And I think it's really cool. So,
well, I'm impressed that people shared them.
Yeah, sure.
Cause I've, my spooky Halloween story, I won't even talk about.
Okay.
Okay. I haven't even told my wife.
Oh, really?
That story.
Oh, wow.
I have told no one that story.
It's your own. Okay.
It happened to me.
Uh-huh. No one else needs to know about it?
I dealt with it.
Okay.
No one else needs to know about it.
I definitely don't want to know about it now. I don't. And there are a few.
I used to literally be afraid to even think about it.
Really?
Because if I thought about it, it might happen again.
Wow. Well, see, and that's one thing I was nervous about is, like, I don't want people to be tormented by... Like, I don't want this opportunity to share a story to be like a trigger for anyone.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if anyone listening, you know, if you think that hearing someone else's experience could be a trigger for you for what, I mean, you can skip it, but there are some really good stories here. I'm just going to mention Haunted House, Gone Wrong. Who doesn't want to hear about that? A shadow figure. I'm getting chills thinking about it. Something captured in a photo that's not supposed to be there. And I'll just throw this out there. Something happens with a plastic plant. Have you heard these?
No.
I haven't heard these.
I didn't listen to them yet.
Okay. All right.
You told me not to.
I told you not to, but I, you know, I just want to make sure. Okay. Well, do you want to get into them?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, this is Jess. I want to hear the scariest thing that's happened to you. I'm talking supernatural, close encounters, unexplained phenomena, that kind of thing. Please leave a message with your name and scary story.
This is Spencer. I don't know that I have any crazy stories that have happened to me. I remember a while back hearing a story, I think it was out of Colorado, though, during a haunted house or something. There was some boy who had gotten separated from his group, and somebody who was running around in the haunted house ended up doing drugs or something and hallucinating and attacking this boy and, like, biting his arm and pulling his tendons out or something crazy. So that's the only scary story I could pass on to you, and I'm really glad it didn't happen to me.
Hey. This is Bob. I have a story. I haven't thought about this in a while, but here we go. One time I came home from school, maybe about a long time ago, see, and I had a late lunch, and I got real sleepy, and then I went and had a nap on the couch. And then when I awoke, I was lying on my back, but I couldn't move. And I had this immense feeling of fear, you know, the worst fear I've ever had in my life, and had this immense pressure on my chest, and I couldn't breathe. I tried to call out to my brother, and I couldn't open my mouth to scream. And then I saw at the foot of the couch where I was sleeping, there was a shadowy figure looking at me. And then it moved across the room and went behind the wall and appeared at me for a while longer. All the while, my ears are ringing, and I still couldn't breathe, and I was just so scared. I thought I was going to die. When I closed my eyes, I saw a pretty distinct vision in my eyes of these two very strong hands pressing down on my chest. And then when I looked up, the face that belonged to those hands looked like one of those Oni masks you see in no plays. Shortly after that, I woke up and collected myself, and maybe I told my brother about it. I didn't really tell anyone else about it. This occurrence only happened maybe the one time, and, well, no. To the severity, it only happened the one time. It regularly happened maybe about once a month the next 3 years, similar, maybe different experiences. Waking up, not being able to move, ringing in the ears, couldn't breathe. I don't know how to explain it. I'm not sure if I had an encounter with shadow people or if it was an encounter with a demon. But hasn't happened in a couple years, so hopefully I've escaped the wrath. So enjoy the story. Take it easy.
My name is Hargis. My experience happened like this. Me and my cousin Adarius used to be good bad friends. Used to have a basement in which we took pictures because he believed that it was somewhat haunted. I took pictures on a silver Polaroid camera my mother has given me. We were taking pictures all across the halls, the walls, the rooms. Nothing was really happening. So we decided to just hang around, you know, talk with spirits, see the spirits, we couldn't really see them, but what happened was is that we were taking pictures of each other, and there was one point where I was taking pictures of Adarius, and on closer inspection of some of the pictures, they see orbs and whatnot, you know, stuff you can see in the haunted house. The thing special about Adarius's picture was I was looking through it, and I saw this being behind him. I don't know how to explain this, but it's true. What happened was that on closer inspection of pictures I took of him, there was some face behind him, and it was contorted and twisted. It was just terrifying. This is true, Jess. This is not bullcrap right here. I'm really scared. I'm just really, really, really scared.
My uncle was in the hospital, and the nurses kept checking on him because he had so much stomach pain. And finally, he felt the urge to go to the bathroom, and he couldn't control it anymore. So he accidentally went everywhere, all over the bed and all over the sheets. So he was so embarrassed, he gathered up all of the sheets and blankets and threw them out the window. And down below on the street, there was a drunk man, and they landed on him. He was kicking and thrashing in the blankets, and finally when they got it off of him, he said, a cop walked up to him and said, what the heck just happened? And he says, I think I just kicked the crap out of a ghost. This is Brandy.
Okay, Jess, this is Megan. Scariest story, when I was a teenager, I came across a dead body of a murder victim that had died that day. And I was not the first person there, but, you know, there was someone else that had already been there. So that was pretty scary. Second thing was a week or so ago, I broke a picture frame when I was moving, and I've been meaning to take the glass out, throw it in the dumpster. And it's been sitting on my table, and I brushed my finger against it, didn't cut myself, but thought I needed to throw it away or I was going to cut myself. 20 minutes later, my friend posts on Facebook with pictures of all the blood that he had cut his left index finger with a box cutter, and, you know, blood all over. But I had bought red sheets that day or the day before. I had also been wanting to buy a red car and all kinds of things. And then 24 hours after he posted that, I cut my left index finger open with dental floss while I was flossing my teeth. There was much, much less blood.
Hi, this is Kevin. My scary story has to do with sleep deprivation. Right after I got divorced, I stopped sleeping. And this would get really bad on like Friday to Saturday nights, along with a combination of drinking. I would have this plastic plant. I don't even remember where I got it. And for some reason, on Friday and Saturday night, when I really wanted to sleep and I'd been working all week, I would look down the hallway and it would turn into like this weird thing that had all these eyes covering it. And it would just petrify me, and I'd stay like, wouldn't sleep really, and just stay in the front room for hours, hoping, you know, that it would finally like, my sleep, I'd pass out, or this thing would leave. And it was really weird because I'd go and look at it the next day and it would just be fine. There'd be no kind of light anywhere around it because it was just at a dead end of a hallway. And that hallway, for some reason, always had the lights burned out. I never really put the two together, but, like, there's a couple times where it looked like it was an aura, and then it was just covered in all these little eyes. And this went on for 2 to 3 weeks, and for some reason I could just never get the courage to throw the plant away. I mean, I think somebody drunkenly fell into it one time and got rid of it, but I swear that that plant was haunted. And it slowly led to a couple of recurring nightmares, but those nightmares are more had to do with Frankenstein chasing me. I don't really know if that has anything to do together, but yeah, I don't know. That's the only semi-supernatural thing, and I could have been just the drinking, but I'm not exactly sure anymore since I don't drink like that anymore. But yeah, all right. Bye.
Hey, this is Rachel. So here is my scary story. I was about 14 years old when me and my friends discovered an old abandoned farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere. So we thought it would be a good idea if we would go out one night and explore it. Of course, it had to be nighttime for that sort of thing. So we grabbed our flashlights and we were looking all around, and everyone was too afraid to go inside. So I kind of got brave and I went first and kind of got everybody over to the barn door, and we peeked inside this barn house, and it was full of all these old farming tools and all kinds of hay everywhere, and it was just kind of like this spooky old place. So we were exploring around and looking at stuff, and I swear I could hear this really quiet sound. I didn't want to spook anybody out, so I didn't say anything at first, but I kept hearing like this little sound that was super, super quiet, and it was like, shh, kind of like that. And after a while, I couldn't take it anymore. I was like, you guys, do you hear that? And for the longest time, nobody could hear the sound. They thought that I was making it up or that it was the wind or something. So, I swore I could hear the sound. And so, I tried to follow around to see if I could find out where the sound was coming from. And we discovered these, horse stalls up ahead. And so I was very carefully looking around the corner in each stall, and I was super, super spooked out. And the noise just kept getting louder and louder, but only by a tiny bit at a time, until pretty soon everybody could hear it. And, there in the third stall was like this mass of white fluffiness down on the floor. There was just this fluffy white creature, and I could not tell what it was. I couldn't figure it out until this little black face appeared amongst the white fluffiness, and then there were two faces, and the sound was coming from this creature, and I was so freaked out, like the hair on my whole entire body was standing on end, because I had never...
That's how it ends.
Oh my gosh.
The voicemail, that was the cutoff. What do you think it was?
I don't know.
Now keep in mind, I had a half hour of those, plus like 7 or 8 stories that people had written to me. Yeah. And I had to cut, like, just imagine what I've cut if that's what we have left. Like, anyway. And that's what I'm saying, like, a scary story. Like, we couldn't have come up with that kind of variety.
Uh-uh.
And that poor uncle in the hospital. So great. I just have to say that we kind of have the best friends that call in and share these stories with us. Thank you, everybody that called in, especially not knowing really like what this was about, what it was for. I took out everybody's last names, so, you know, don't want to get anyone in trouble or anything like that. But thank you, everyone, for sharing. And if you still want to call in and share a scary story, or if you just have comments or thoughts, like, please call us. The number's 801-382-7672. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. So you were saying that you can't really share your scariest story.
No, I can't.
Yeah.
Or I won't.
You won't. You won't share it.
I won't share it.
Yeah. I have a few. I'm going to share kind of a lame one, because I have three that I also won't share. One I experienced with someone very close to me, and we just keep that to ourselves. Right. It's, yeah, it's terrifying. But this one night I was walking home. I worked at this pizza place, and I was taking a back road home afterward. This is in high school, I think. And it's like 12:30 in the morning. Everything's dark. There are a couple street lamps. Rough day at work, you know, walking home, and all of a sudden this giant white fluid object comes and stands and towers almost at my height right in front of me, and I hear this chain rattling. I'm like, what the heck? And like, I froze. And then I like kind of stepped back, and I saw it was a Saint Bernard. Those are huge dogs.
Those are huge.
A Saint Bernard that someone had in their front yard on a chain at 12:30 in the morning. And it was silent except for that chain. And all of a sudden it's almost like eye level.
Yeah.
That was terrifying.
I've never heard a Saint Bernard bark. I've got a friend who's got one, but I've never heard it bark.
Huh, this one didn't bark.
It's a massive dog.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, especially like, if you think you're all alone.
I've seen them on TV. I've seen them in movies.
Uh-huh.
Until you see one in real life,
right,
you don't realize
how
massive they are.
Yep, it's a big dog. It's a big dog.
It's like a small bear.
It kind of is. Yeah, it kind of is. It was awful. And of course, these other stories, like yours, they're just so dark and so, like, I don't even want to think about them. But thank you, everyone that called in. Did we just record a podcast?
We just recorded a podcast.
Holy cow.
Episode one is in the can.
Episode one! Do we know what we're doing for episode two?
We have an interview.
Ooh.
Who did we interview?
Barack Obama. Did we get Obama?
We didn't get Obama.
Oh.
Oh.
Next time.
Well,
no, episode
on
three.
The list it says I interviewed you.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll be... I'll have to think up some interesting answers for that interview. Okay. Well, that'll be fun. Cool. Yeah, so I guess we did. I guess we recorded a podcast. So the idea of this podcast, we didn't necessarily want it to be any one specific thing. We just wanted to explore sound, different things to listen to. So we've got the interview, which I love. We'll throw in a song. We've got some found audio. We've got people calling in and leaving messages on not my personal voicemail. we've got this ongoing story. I'm excited.
I am too.
It's going to be good.
So tune in next time.
Tune in next time. We, you know what we need though? We're almost a podcast. We don't have a sponsor.
That's true.
It's like, it's just us. We're paying for all the equipment, all the time.
Yeah, I'd like some new mics.
Some mics. We've got to get some mics. Paying for the website and hosting. So we need we'll figure out a sponsor. We need like some theme music, pull everything together. So we're like, you hear the song come on and you're like, yes, please leave a message on.
So we're almost a podcast.
Almost a podcast. We're a baby podcast. We're a baby podcast. So I just want to thank Christofsky for the music. BC Sterrett, he's on Facebook. You just look at his name. BC Sterrett, 2 R's, 2 T's. You can call us at 801-382-7672, or you can leave a message through email, pleasepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find us. This has been a lot of work setting all this up.
Yeah.
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter by finding @messagepodcast. And that's it. That's our first episode.
All right.
Yay, us! Yay, we did it!